Hello and welcome to Parkinson's Life, the award-winning podcast offering a voice to the global Parkinson's community. Each episode, we bring together people impacted by the condition for an honest conversation to share their stories, perspectives, and ideas on how to live well with Parkinson's. In this episode, we focus on sialorrhea, also known as drooling, which is a common symptom experienced by people with Parkinson's. UK-based David Bateson, who was diagnosed with the condition in 2015, explains how sialorrhea has impacted his speech, working life, and interactions with others. He is joined by Dr. Francesca Morganti, a neurologist based at St. George's, University of London, who has been working with David for several years. Together, our guests tackle key questions around this underreported symptom and share insights on how to manage it. This podcast is sponsored by MERS Therapeutics, a global family-owned pharmaceutical company that supports people living with health conditions that impact their quality of life.
I am Francesca Morganti. I am a neurologist working with people with Parkinson's disease. I have been working with people with Parkinson's for many years, at least for 20 years. And the reason why I decided to commit all my career and work to people with Parkinson's is because in neurology is a disease that a neurologist can make the difference.
I'm David Bateson. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's 8 years ago now, about 2015. Having first noticed symptoms in 2012, it took a while to get to the correct diagnosis and so on. I live with Anna, who's been married to me for 40-odd years. We've got two boys, they're grown up and away. I retired fairly soon after getting the Parkinson's diagnosis, actually. I have a fairly gentle life now, and go and watch cricket whenever I can, and spend time gardening. I first came across Francesca 3, 4, 5 years ago, and Francesca and I have worked together since then. I find her quite tremendous and very helpful and very straightforward, very talkative sometimes. And through her, I ended up having deep brain stimulation earlier this year, which has helped quite a lot in turning things. But one of my original symptoms was drooling and tremor, which originally sent some of the medics off on the wrong track, I think, which is why it took a while to get to the correct diagnosis. But the drooling and sialorrhea has been with me for several years now. And sometimes it's easy to deal with, sometimes it's not. Comes and goes like the weather.
Sialorrhea, also known as drooling, is a frequent symptom of Parkinson's disease in all different stages of the disease. Despite it a frequent symptom, is quite underreported and also underinvestigated by the neurologist and the other health professionals. Sialorrhea consists in excessive presence of saliva in the mouth that leads to drooling and can be socially embarrassing, but also can lead to speech difficulties and also to swallowing difficulties. On the other side, swallowing difficulties are a major cause for sialorrhea in Parkinson's disease. The presence of saliva in the mouth is also due to the fact that it's not possible to clear the saliva from the mouth with the swallowing. Interestingly, when I met David for the first time, he did not report the drooling to me. It's a major symptom where off periods, meaning that he had a fluctuation in his mobility during the day. And we discussed most of the consultation about this fluctuation and how to recognize it. But very interestingly, we didn't touch the issue of sialorrhea of drooling, and I did not ask either about that. So that tells us a lot how this symptom is underestimated and not really reported very frequently from people with Parkinson's disease or even investigated from a neurologist.
It's very interesting because at first I saw it just as because I had quite a lot of tremor in my palate. And I just saw the drooling as a consequence of that rather than anything else. And so you just learn to live with it as best you could and get on with it. And for months at a time, it would be sort of pretty well under control, and then it would come back with a vengeance and be quite bad again.
We also noticed at the last appointment, we discussed it a lot. We tried to understand the cause of the drooling. And we hypothesized that the drooling arises from the difficulty to mobilize, to move your facial muscle, especially when you are on the off time. Whereas when your facial muscles are more mobile, it's easier to move them. The drooling seems to disappear. Yeah, what do you think about that, David? Do you agree with this hypothesis that I made about the drooling?
Yes and no. I think sometimes I find if I'm producing a tremendous amount of saliva, sometimes I try very hard just to keep my mouth shut. Other times it's just impossible to keep my mouth shut. And when the tremor in my chin is getting quite a lot and so on, that's really hard work. But yeah, and I think by and large, I'd agree that if I'm exercising my jaws and using my facial muscles, you're much more aware of saliva being around anyway. And it seems easier to control it, yes. But there are times it just gets out of kilter.
So David really summarized the two main mechanisms for drooling in Parkinson. On one side, there is increased production of saliva. And on the other side, there is a difficulty to clear the saliva. And this difficulty to clear the saliva from the mouth is determined by difficulty to move the facial muscle, difficulty swallowing. These happen often in the off time, and the presence, for example, of tremor in the palate or in some facial muscle. So as we say, when we explain this symptom, this is a multifactorial symptom. So there are many factors that determine drooling in Parkinson.
It can occasionally get very frustrating. For example, if you're producing a huge amount of saliva and you can't swallow it for whatever reason, you just have to try and keep your mouth shut and to stop it going everywhere. And then somebody asks you a question, what do? You can't open your mouth to answer it because the saliva is just going to go everywhere. You can't swallow it because you've forgotten how to swallow it. It's really quite a difficult challenge. And it gets very frustrating at times. People are waiting for an answer and you can't say, hang on, because there's nothing you can do. So it's just very, very difficult and very frustrating occasionally. For me, drooling comes and goes. Sometimes it's very, very bad. Sometimes it's very mild. Sometimes I forget it happens at all. Is that typical?
Yes, so it can be quite unpredictable and actually has not been studied yet in a very extensive way how much medication for Parkinson can modify the drooling. So I cannot answer your question, for example, in respect to the dosing and the time of medication for Parkinson. Surely, when you are in the off time, so when the medication are low in the brain, there is hypomobility of the facial muscle, difficulty to swallow, and this is a major contributor to the drooling. But on the other side, regarding the production of saliva, the excessive production of saliva, this might be driven by a problem with controlling the secretion of the salivary glands. And in this respect, there are many factors that can influence that. The disease and the fact that this cannot be modified by the medication for Parkinson. And another very important factor, there are other medication not used for Parkinson, that actually can increase the production of saliva and can impact on how much drooling a patient displays.
So it was quite possible that I could take something at some point which would make it much worse, just as a side effect.
Yeah, there are some medication, not medication for Parkinson's, but for example, some medication used to treat some psychiatric symptom of Parkinson's, they can induce excessive saliva, or medication used to treat cognitive symptoms of Parkinson or dementia, they can increase salivation, they can increase production of saliva, and also many other medication that are not used in Parkinson can contribute to increased salivation. So it's a combination of these two factors, increased production, and often increased production is driven by some medication, but not necessarily For example, Parkinson's disease itself can be responsible for increased production. Despite this factor has not been studied very well into the scientific literature. On the other side, we have decreased clearance of the saliva from the mouth. And this is a secondary to impaired swallowing. It is very frequent, especially in later stages. And this is why it's a very frequent symptom, especially with advanced Parkinson's disease. And also hypomobility of the facial muscle. So if you do use very well your facial muscle because you have hypomimia, meaning that the facial expression is not normal, and then you have your mouth open, this leads to increased drooling.
Well, I find sometimes if I've got bad drooling, my speech becomes very, very poor, and I tend to rush my words and slur my words, and I get told, "Hey, are you drunk?" Which is not very satisfying. And for me, there's a clear link between having serious drooling and not being able to speak properly, and having to think far more carefully about it if I do.
David, thanks for highlighting that, because this is very frequent, but again, very much underreported. Speech problems in Parkinson, especially after many years of disease, are very frequent. But again, what causes speech problem is multifactorial. And in this respect, increased drooling has never been really considered much, despite when I speak to many patients, is the case. So drooling is not just a cosmetic symptom. And this is why historically, neurologists, I think, that have neglected this symptom, because in their consultation, and often, consultation can be brief, they have to explore the impact of the disease on walking, on psychiatric symptoms, on cognitive symptoms, on tremor. And then the drooling get neglected. And it's really a shame because, as you said, drooling is responsible also for speech problems. And you notice that very well because your drooling fluctuates. And since it's fluctuating, you can recognize how your speech improves when the drooling is not there.
Yes, very much so. I get told about it by Anna all the time. If I suddenly start slurring my words, she's noticed that very often it follows on from the drooling getting much worse half an hour beforehand. So my laundry bills go up. And I have found that if the drooling gets through, is quite bad, or if it's unexpectedly come on bad and become quite serious, then it's noticeable to other people very often because of I'm slurring my words. Anna's quite good at recognizing what's probably caused it and so on, but other people aren't necessarily. I'm very conscious that other people can react to it, so perhaps I therefore try and adapt my own behavior beforehand. There's always a concern with drooling and with slurred speech that people might think, you've had too much alcohol, that there's other problems around and so on, you're just incompetent as an individual, which is never a very nice thing and often really quite a worry.
Yeah, so drooling is a symptom that causes a lot of social embarrassment and also isolation and lack of social interactions, because people with Parkinson having drooling are afraid to display the drooling in social life. And the top of that, it causes also speech problem. And so they cannot even communicate. And the communication, it's a very important aspect of social interaction. So ultimately, this neglected symptom leads to social isolation and avoidance of a situation in which people can see the person with Parkinson having drooling.
Yeah. In my own experience, it was one of the things that directly led me to retire from work early. I used to work in executive recruitment and headhunting. And if you're talking to senior individuals about a new company and a new possibility, the last thing you want to be as an individual is for them to think, God, there's something wrong with this chap. There's all this drool coming out of his mouth and he can't form his words properly. And so it undermines your self-confidence very, very quickly. And it underlines your ability to sometimes go and earn a living.
Yes, I consider that Parkinson's disease, mean age of onset, is like around 58, 60. And these people is active. They do the work and they can work for many years. And as David pointed out, drooling might really affect their ability even to function normally in their work life.
And I have to say, most people are very understanding if they know the situation, but you don't always get the opportunity to explain to people what the situation is, and they're not always interested anyway. So, but as I say, most people are very helpful, and if you make allowances and are only too happy to try and help, but not everybody is.
You are listening to the Parkinson's Life podcast with David and Francesca, funded by Merz. Be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform to hear more from the series.
David, do you think that over these years, since I met you, I modified your treatment many times, and then ultimately we considered the brain stimulation and you were implanted with the brain stimulation? But do you think that these different treatment changes that I used to do, did they impact on the drooling? Did they help temporarily from the drooling?
Well, it's difficult to recall, particularly something like the drooling, which it does come and go. What I have found with, not just with drooling, with other things, is that exercise and activity of any sort helps a lot. And whatever else you do, I think if you're exercising muscles and using different muscles and thinking about having to do that, that actually is often very good news and very helpful and very useful.
Over the last years, the drooling became an issue for you and you became more self-conscious. Especially after the brain stimulation, we were so worried in improving your symptoms, you know, improving your tremor and improving your mobility. And then suddenly you report to me that the drooling became a really big issue and we really needed to consider some kind of specific treatment for it. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, yeah. It was really with the operation that drooling came back with a vengeance, should we say. For years, I've walked around with two handkerchiefs in my pocket and been able to manage things quite easily that way. But suddenly I found I was getting through a face cloth every couple of hours and had to change it to get a new one and so on. And the drooling became really quite extreme. I've had it before when it's been quite severe for short periods of time, but never on a sustained basis. And really since the start of this year, it's become much more of an issue again. But like other things, you know, there are days when it doesn't bother me at all. Sometimes a few hours go by and you go, good, it's got a lot better. And then suddenly, for no reason at all, it suddenly comes back again. If you think in terms of tides, and tides come and go all the time, and in that, sometimes they're very big tides and very extreme movements, and sometimes much milder, but this can be a bit like that. And so I expect it to fluctuate. Francis, you've always been helpful in helping me to try and understand how to deal with symptoms, and I'm very keen to understand if there are further ways that one might be able to manage diarrhea, manage to live with it, things I can do, combinations of things that can be tried that go well beyond the, well, just learn to keep your mouth shut.
There are many management options. First of all, there are medication, oral medication, tablets that you can take. They act on the production of saliva, so they reduce the production of saliva. This class of drug has the name of anticholinergic drugs, so they block the acetylcholine transmission. But doing so, one of the major side effects is forgetfulness, memory problems, confusion. So usually we are unable to use this medication for a long time. Often, people with Parkinson do not tolerate them because they might improve the sialorrhea, but on the other side, having memory problems, confusion, forgetfulness is not a good gain from this medication. Then we can also reduce the amount of saliva production by injecting a medication into the salivary glands, so the glands that produce the saliva. And this treatment is repeated to improve the drooling. This treatment has the advantage that it's a local treatment, so it doesn't interact with the symptoms of Parkinson, it doesn't interact with other medication. And then there is a very important treatment, and as you pointed out, it can be a combination of different treatments. And this third treatment is a speech and language therapy. Why? Because speech and language therapy helps a person with Parkinson to improve the mobility of facial muscle, to improve the mobility of the swallowing muscle. So it acts on improving the clearance of saliva from the mouth. Also, we spoke many times on how you can improve the mobility of your swallowing muscle, but in general, your facial muscle. And there are also some activities that can help, like, for example, singing. So we now trying to find more and more conservative measures using activities that can be also fun for people with Parkinson. So, for example, it's very well known that physical exercise is a great treatment for most of the motor symptoms of Parkinson. Singing, it's a great treatment for rehabilitation of voice and facial muscle. So singing in a choir can help at least to enjoy your time with other people while trying to exercise your facial and swallowing muscles.
In my case, I've been told for years and years and years, I can't sing. So.
Well, I mean, like, there is always the first time that you start and then you can be training that.
Wow, yeah. So singing might be a stage too far for me, I suspect. Acting might be possible.
Acting is another option. Theater, again, it's another complementary treatment. We call complementary treatment those treatment that we combine in add-on with oral medication and non-oral treatment, like, for example, surgery. And they can involve different kind of activities like acting, singing, or physical exercise that they can complement conventional treatments. But the advantage of this treatment, that are complementary treatment, they can be repeated very often. So there is the advantage of repetition, and also they act on motivation. So if a person is motivated to be engaged in this treatment, the success it's often very frequent.
The motivation is very high. I'm just concerned about the effect on other people of having to listen to me attempting to sing.
Well, I think that's one thing that I learned from working with people with Parkinson is that they are not afraid once, you know, they start something new to pursue that new activity if this makes their life better. And also, if you do that with other people with Parkinson, what always strike me is the big solidarity of other people with Parkinson helping the new ones to some kind of a new activity. This is why I always try to suggest my patient to engage in groups, because they can get the kind of push of motivation, also of risk-taking from the other patient that have Parkinson.
I have to say, I'd endorse that wholeheartedly. In my experience, one, talking to other people is really, really good news. And two, involving other people is really, really good news. What I have realized is that having Parkinson's, it's jolly hard work for whoever's looking after you. And it's an immense strain on the carers.
Yeah. So the carers are often your partners. And being your carers, they forget how it is being a partner. So it's important to support them, and the groups help the carers maybe to regain the role of partners again. So like we prefer to address people with Parkinson with people with Parkinson because they are persons, it's important that also we take care of the carers, and they are not carers anymore, but partners. Which kind of changes did you do in your life to improve or to prevent the problem truly?
Well, there's very few things that were specific to that alone. Most of it is often addressing two or three or four symptoms at the same time. Talking is always good news. It helps with everything. Talking naturally, you're exercising your face muscles anyway. Trying to talk more clearly, it helps. So I've done what I can in terms of actually physically bothering to engage with other people and talk to other people, face-to-face, engage meetings, joining groups, etc. I haven't gone to any acting classes or anything like that, and I haven't joined a choir. In terms of other bits and bobs that I have tried, I take a lot of physical exercise anyway, because I know it makes a huge difference to Parkinson's in general. But I've never yet got to the point of saying, right, I ought to exercise from the neck upwards, in terms of the muscles of my jaw and my face, specifically to just concentrate on that, to see if that makes a good positive difference. And I think that's probably one of the things I should do more of.
Surely on the medical side, we have considered some medication option. You try one of the medication options and we haven't tried speech language therapy. I think that really will help. I always suggest my patient to go through a course of speech and language therapy because they can be trained by the therapist on how to really improve their swallowing and their speech. And that has a really great impact on drooling. I saw that many times in people with deep breath stimulation, they are very much, you know, dissected in their symptoms. We spend a lot of time with them. And this is why we got interested in drooling. We recognize now drooling because talking to them for a long time, you are able now to discover the symptom. So in my experience, speech and language therapy really made a huge, huge difference, especially in people receiving deep breath stimulation.
I'd welcome some help on that. I think it would make a big positive difference. I'm very conscious sometimes. I splurge out words. I tend to talk very, very quickly at times, particularly when the drooling gets bad. You're trying to get the message out as quickly as you can before you sort of sprays saliva everywhere, and that just leads to a rush of words and complete nonsense being talked, and so you end up taking twice as long to get your message across as you would have done otherwise.
So do you think that still, despite the changes that we have performed with your medication and deep breath stimulation, the drooling is still a concern for you?
It's a concern, yes. It's less of a concern than it was, because I can feel it heading in the right direction. And what I've discovered over the past few years is that nothing really happens instantly. And as long as things are heading in the right direction rather than the wrong direction, then you've got to be happy with that, really. I've noticed over the years that since having symptoms that led to me being diagnosed as Parkinson's, that drooling has been there for a lot of the time. And it was certainly one of the very early symptoms that I did have. And in those days, it was associated very much with tremor in my palate and my chin. And those are things that, well, when I first went to see the medics about it, I was told categorically, you do not have Parkinson's disease. But anyway, things didn't get better under the regime they gave me, and eventually it was diagnosed it was Parkinson's. So drooling and saliva and tremor have been there from the very beginning. It waxes and wanes in terms of its importance and its significance and its noticeability. It's now reached the point where, if it's relatively mild, I often won't notice the tremor in my palate, and I sometimes won't notice minor bits of drooling until suddenly the paper I'm reading gets covered in spit. My shirt is suddenly soaking wet again. So the quantity of drooling that one produces and so on does change as time goes by. What I've relied on throughout that time, particularly now, is Anna, my wife, who looks after me very, very well. She's very good at noticing things and picking me up and saying, "Yuvu, are you aware that this has happened?" And without that, I think I'd find life much, much more difficult. So one does become totally reliant on a carer being very patient and very observant, but very honest in giving you feedback and telling you about things and so on. So that is extremely important, right? And it's that leads me to the comment, say, look after your carer, because it's very important that you do. In terms of other people and so on, then, as I say, most other people are willing to help. Some people will ask how you are, or if there's anything they can do, wanting just to be told, no, don't worry at all, it's just go away, and they're asking for form and they don't really want to know the answer. But most people will help, particularly if you give them particular parameters to work to and say, yeah, if this happens, then tell me about it. Or just be aware this might happen and don't worry about it, it's just part of life, and clear it up and carry on. But if you do ask people to help, be precise about what you ask them to help. In my experience, the more precise you can be in what you ask for, the more able people feel able to provide it, the more comfortable they'll be providing it too, because they understand the circumstances and so on. Drooling is one of those things that when other people see it and they don't know what's going on, they're liable to be quite concerned about it and feel quite anxious about it themselves. So very often it is one of those things that if you warn people that something might happen and you might start dribbling and so on, they say, okay, thank you very much indeed for telling me, I'm quite happy with that. That, I find, is quite important for people to know. It is one of the more visible signs that something's wrong. And it's one of the more obviously embarrassing signs that something's wrong. You know, because you dribble on your clothes, dribble on the carpet, on papers and things like that. And it's hard to miss. And you can't just ignore it. It's there.
Don't miss the opportunity to speak to your neurologist about drooling. Often neurologists do not ask. So when you go to see your neurologist or your nurse, go prepared with a list of symptoms that bother you the most. And in this list, if you are drooling, include it, because this is a manifestation of Parkinson, for which your neurologist can make a plan of different treatments that might help, might improve at least, disabling symptom.
I think if I have one thing to say to other people, it's try and be open about things. Be comfortable to talk about it, because most people will be interested. If they're interested in you, they'll be interested in trying to help, just as that's what most people like to do. And as I said, the more precise you can be and the more accurate you can be, the easier it is for people to understand. As with Parkinson's, in my experience with Sandler, it won't go away completely. You can mitigate it for quite a lot. There's always things you can do to make life better for yourself, be it take more exercise, getting other people to share the burden. Tomorrow can always be better than today.
Thanks, David, so much for taking the time for discussing with me today about drooling and sharing your experience with other people.
Well, Fibot, thank you. I found your input extremely helpful and the insights very, very useful. So, yeah, there's plenty for me to think about and act on there. So I'm very, very grateful to you. Thank you.
Parkinson's Life magazine is produced by Speak Media on behalf of Parkinson's Europe, the leading voice for Parkinson's in Europe. For the latest research and information on Parkinson's, visit www.parkinsonseurope.org. This podcast has been sponsored by MERS Therapeutics. The content of this episode was up to date and accurate at the time of recording in June 2023. The episode represents the attendees' own opinions and experiences. This episode has been reviewed by MERS Therapeutics. Thanks for listening to the Parkinson's Life podcast. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review. It helps make sure others can find us. If you'd like to share your story with Parkinson's Life magazine, get in touch through Facebook, Twitter, or by emailing editor@parkinsonslife.eu. Keep a lookout for our next episode, and until then, take care.